MediTalk with Dr. Ross Walker.
Well, we normally have a chat with Dr. Ross on a Tuesday, and we did this week, but we thought we'd do something a little different this Friday afternoon because a good friend of the program is having a procedure on Monday, and she, we won't mention any names, but she is a little concerned. And so she sent me a few emails, and she is a regular listener to Dr. Ross. She loves what Dr. Ross has got to say, and she's a big fan of Dr. Ross. So I asked Dr. Ross if he would talk to us this afternoon about this, because I know when we have talked about this before, and we're talking about atrial fibrillation. When we've talked about this before, AF as they say, they shorten it to, we get emails from people saying, I have this, I think I have this. I'm not too sure whether I do or whether I don't have this. So, Dr. Ross, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Brent. Great to talk to you on a different day, my friend.
Yeah, on a Friday. It's always a good day on a Friday.
Absolutely.
I've got some questions here which I have written out.
Yeah.
Now, in your answers, you may cover some of these questions. So I'm thinking of what our dear lady would like me to ask. Here we go. Why does the heart go out of a regular rhythm or pattern in the first place?
Oh, okay. That's easy. See, as the problem is, and we've spoken about this on numerous occasions before, mate, that our body was only designed to work well for 30, 40 years wandering around a jungle with a spear. And when you hit 50 and the hormones go south, which they do in all of us, males and females, things start to wear out. And the electrics in the heart are the weakest part of the heart and the thing that wears out first. And the atria are low-pressure pumping chambers that pump into the high-pressure ventricles. So those thinner-walled atrium have to squeeze blood into the ventricles. And after a while, they say, I can't keep doing this. And the electrics in the atria fail. And then so instead of the heart pumping, it starts quivering, and that's what atrial fibrillation is, where the atria are quivering and the ventricles are pumping all over the place in response to the atrial fibrillation. So 1% of people up to age 50 have had a clinical episode of atrial fibrillation, 5% 60, 10% 70, 20% 80, if we all lived to 150, and thank God we don't, but if we all did, we'd all be fibrillating because the electrics would just be completely worn out in the heart. So that's the reason. It's a wearing out of the electrical system. But there are things that make it worse. So, for example, people who drink a lot of grog can irritate the heart and send themselves to atrial fibrillation. People with high blood pressure, because the heart's having to work even harder under a higher pressure, those poor little thin-walled chambers have to squeeze into a very high-pressure chamber. They can go into fibrillation. And people with things like thyroid problems or cardiomyopathies, often they then have atrial fibrillation as well.
Okay. Why, for some, is it a single episode? For others, it can come and go. And then, for others, it's permanent.
Yeah, it really depends on, firstly, how often you get it and how long you've had it for. So if someone starts off, say, in their 20s, 30s or 40s getting atrial fibrillation, there is a strong genetic component. So about 30% of atrial fibrillation is genes and the rest is all environment. So if you start early, then what happens is you might have an episode once, and then 6 months later, a couple of years later, you'll have an episode. But then as time goes on, it'll become more frequent, more prolonged, and then move into being chronic, where it's there all the time. So the earlier you get in to treat it, the better off it is. But it's just so variable for some people. I have some people who have atrial fibrillation on and off throughout the day. I have other people who might just have one episode every 6 months. So it just depends on the amount of genetics you've got contributing to the atrial fibrillation and all the environmental issues. So it's what I call the five stressors. So there are five categories of stress that can either precipitate an episode of atrial fibrillation or even precipitate a heart attack, depending on the stress. So number one, this one's going to shock you, emotional stress. Can you tell me someone, Brent, who doesn't have that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
we all do.
So emotional stress, number one. Number two is mental stress. So people are under the pump at work, and in fact there was a big study called the Whitehall Study of over 10,000 British civil servants. It's gone on for 20 years in the UK. And it's found that those who had what we call job strain, which is high demand, low control, so the middle managers cop more high blood pressure, atrial fibrillation, heart attacks than the bosses because they're under the job strain. So number three is physical stress. And I'm not just talking about the physical stress of too much exercise. I'm also talking about these idiots that climb Mount Everest. It's not just the climbing a tall mountain. It's the freezing cold temperatures and the high altitudes with low oxygen. That sort of physical stress. The physical stress of being obese. The physical stress of chronic pain. The physical stress of an operation. Any of these things can bring it on. Then there is pharmacologic stress. I had a 35-year-old patient come to see me. He still can't tell me why he did this, but in the space of an hour, had 3 double-shot cappuccinos and put himself into atrial fibrillation.
Right.
But it's not just that. You can go and have a night on the grog. That can put you into atrial fibrillation. These idiots that use illegal drugs. There's a great joke, safe testing of drugs at a dance party. Give me a break. There's nothing safe about any of these damn things. So when you have any sort of pharmacologic, legal or illegal stimulant, that can put you into atrial fibrillation. And then finally, there's infective stress. So you're going along fine, and then bang, you get a bad episode of influenza or pneumonia or a urinary tract infection. That can whack you into atrial fibrillation. So does that sort of answer your question?
It does, yeah. You mentioned thyroid. I know that she had thyroid problems, but those yep. thyroid problems apparently have now been fixed.
Yep.
Does that change the AF?
Oh, look, it can, yeah. If you have an overactive thyroid, when you're in the throes of the overactive thyroid, that can put you into atrial fibrillation. When you have the overactive thyroid treated, then it may go back to sinus rhythm. But equally, it's a bit like blowing up a balloon. Once you've blown up the balloon, it'll never go back to its original size. And once you've had atrial fibrillation, even though the atrium might be going back to pumping in what we call sinus rhythm, it still never goes back to the original size, so it's still an issue and still predispose you to getting atrial fibrillation further on.
Let's talk about the procedure. What is electrical cardioversion?
Okay, cardioversion is where you go in, they put you off to sleep, so a full general anaesthetic, and put 240 volts through your chest to whack you back into sinus rhythm. And it's a stopgap measure to keep you in sinus rhythm. And it may, look, you may go back into atrial fibrillation the next day. You may not have another episode for 2 years. So it is something that's quite effective. In fact, today, this morning, I've seen 2 patients with severe heart failure made worse by the fact that they went into atrial fibrillation. That both of them had problems with their ventricles, the pump. And when you go into fibrillation, it makes your heart even more inefficient. So I'm considering cardioversion in both those gentlemen to try and get them back in a good rhythm.
How long is the patient out of action for?
About 5 minutes.
That's it?
If they go back into sinus rhythm, they'd be out of hospital a few hours later after the normal observation period, and they just get back to normal activity. But the point is, any stressor that I've mentioned can put them back into atrial fibrillation. So if they went home and had a screaming argument with their next-door neighbour, they'd probably go back into atrial fibrillation.
Can this procedure fix people for good?
No, not in the slightest. No, in fact, I try to avoid cardioversion if I can, because it's my theory that every time you have a shock through your chest, whether it's an electric shock that you might get from just touching a live electrical wire or being hit by lightning or having a cardioversion, I personally believe that weakens the electrical system, might get you back in a good rhythm, but it predisposes you to having more atrial fibrillation down the track. So if I can avoid a cardioversion, I will, but sometimes you can't. If people are getting really bad symptoms, feel lousy in atrial fibrillation, you've got to get them back in a good rhythm.
So, but you can't stay in AF, can you?
Oh, yeah, I've got buckets of patients, again, who are in chronic AF all the time, and they don't feel anything. They have a normal life, and doesn't reduce your life by 1 millisecond as long as you take the appropriate medications to stop a stroke. So very strong blood thinners. All people with chronic atrial fibrillation over a certain age should be taking one of these really strong blood thinners. We used to use warfarin, but now we have better agents. There's a drug, Pradaxa, Xarelto, and Eliquis. And these drugs keep your blood thin so you don't have a stroke. And also, if your heart's going very fast, we can just slow the rate down, but you're still in atrial fibrillation. So chronic atrial fibrillation is not the end of the road. It's not that big a deal. It just needs to be managed properly.
What is catheter? Is it ablation?
Ablation, yeah. It's called radiofrequency ablation or pulmonary vein isolation. It's a big procedure. They go in through the vein in the groin, go up to the heart, make a right turn when they get to the heart and go through a thing called the foramen ovale into the left side, and they burn little rings around the pulmonary veins. It takes about 3 hours. It's a very prolonged procedure under a general anaesthetic. So it's a 3-hour general anaesthetic. And I think it's best for people from the age of about 50 up to about 65. I still suggest it for some people over the age of 65. And it does have about a 90% success rate, often if you've had 2 bites of the cherry. So sometimes you need 2 3-hour general anaesthetics to get the final result, but you won't get any better than a 90% success rate with the procedure. And it's very effective. I think it makes the drugs work a lot better, but it still doesn't cure the atrial fibrillation.
Right. So even though you may have gone through that procedure, it still may not cure the AF.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can't. There's no atrial fibrillation is a chronic condition. There is no cure for it, but it is still very well managed. And I would see every day in my practice 2, 3, 4, 5 patients with atrial fibrillation. It's one of the commonest conditions in cardiology.
How do you know you've got it if you don't go and see someone like
well,
you?
Well, a third of people don't know they have it. They just go into atrial fibrillation without even knowing, and that's a bad sign. If you're not feeling the AF, initially when it's happening, it means your electrical system throughout is not working well because your heart's not mounting a fast response to the atrial fibrillation. But most people who go into atrial fibrillation will suddenly feel the heart jumping all over the place in their chest, or they might feel equivalents such as more short of breath or some chest tightness or some lightheadedness. So we look for all of those different symptoms.
How important is diet, exercise, weight?
Yep, great question. The lifestyle changes with atrial fibrillation are so important. The University of Adelaide have done a really elegant study where they got people to lose somewhere between 5 to 10 kilos, markedly improve their atrial fibrillation.
When you say it markedly improved their atrial fibrillation, and the number of times they suffered it?
Oh, no, they're just some people, it just stops them getting atrial fibrillation. Because, you see, you think of it like this. That belly fat that people have isn't just an ugly lump of lard. It's a toxic reservoir that has a lot of chemicals in it, but it's also a marker for how much fat you have in your organs.
Right.
So people who have a fat belly also have a fat heart and fat lungs and a fat brain and fat kidneys. So the fat builds up everywhere. So if you can get the fat out of your body, you're getting the fat out of the electrical system as well. So stop all the scarring and the irritation in the electrical system.
So is it possible that if you had AF and you were overweight, if you saw a patient who came and you said, well, you've got AF, but they were carrying a fair bit of excess weight, would you say to them, look, the first thing you need to do is lose some weight?
Absolutely. And look, I've got to say to you that if the vast majority of my patients lost anywhere between 5, 10, 20 kilos, I'd be twiddling my thumbs all day.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
Amazing. I think you've answered all of our questions.
Thank you. Well, good luck to your friend, and I hope she does well.
Can I ask you, how do I put this? After listening to all of your answers of these questions, would you suggest that she maybe get a second opinion?
No, I think if the cardiologist said she needs a cardioversion, she probably does.
Right.
But again, without seeing the patient personally,
hard for you to make
it'd
a
be
call.
Very hard for me to make a decision. And I mean, I get emails from all over the world, actually,
but
typically from Australia, because people hear me talk on radio, and they send me emails wanting me to sort out their issues. But a lot of the times, their issues are so complex that it demeans the condition and my service by me trying to just answer it in a quick email. So you've got to be guided by the experts that you're seeing.
You're a good man. Have a great weekend.
Talk to you on Tuesday.
I'll talk to you Tuesday. Thanks a lot, Dr. Ross. Yeah, there you go. Well, we thank Dr. Ross for his time this afternoon and for our favourite listener. And for others, as I say, every time we talk about this, we get emails from people who say, gosh, I suffer from this, I think. Well, you shouldn't think. You should go and see a cardiologist about it. And if you don't have a cardiologist, the first thing you should do is